We're holding on page Bays in Sanhedrin, top line, middle of Ois Bays. We started learning yesterday, we started learning about an opinion that that a dayan is not allowed to make a pshara, livtsoya, to make a pshara between the baladin, Rabbi Yehuda ben Asher, Rabbi Yitzchak Levi said that in fact if a person praises a dayan for doing that, then that alone is insulting and reviling Hashem. The Gemara had gone on to say that we brought another explanation from Rabbi Eliezer of the meaning of Ritzei Berech Nietz Hashem, the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. So he doesn't necessarily agree with Rabbi Eliezer, but Rabbi Yitzchak Levi, you're not allowed to make a pshara. But be that as it may, he says that Ritzei Berech is referring to a different case where a person steals grain and makes bread out of it. Can he say a bracha for taking challah from it? There's again a Ritzei Berech, a robber who blesses Hashem is really for the Birkas HaMitzvah is really reviling Hashem with that because the mitzvah baba there. So now the Braisa continues with other opinions about what a Ritzei Berech Nietz Hashem refers to. Rav Meir Omer Nemer Ritzei Ela Keneged Yehuda. The Britzea of this pasuk actually refers to Yehuda, Shenema, as we find him using the word this word Betza, Shenema, as he says, as the pasuk says, Vayyemi Yehuda alachal ma Betza kinar gasachinu. What are we going to gain from killing our brother? Let's go and sell him to the Yishmaelim. So Yehuda himself, in other words, was wrong for doing that. And Rashi says, because he knows that his brothers are going to listen to what he has to say, so what is he saying? Let's go sell him to the Ishmaelim. He should say, let's bring him back home. Mela, in other words, Reuven figured the brothers are not going to listen to him, so therefore he had to kind of evade the issue, put him in the burr, and later on he'll find him. But Yehuda knows they're going to listen to him, so therefore he should have gone the whole way and said they should return him. And in fact, v'cholam v'orechas Yehuda. So the mayor continues now. If a person blesses Yehuda and compliments him for doing that, harezim enayet, then he's really angering Hashem in doing that. Because the fact is, it was wrong of Yehuda to do that. Val zeh ne'emar, and this is what mayor says. This is what the pasuk means. Uvetzei beirach nietz Hashem. Who would venture? A person would think that, you know what, Yehuda did the best with what he could do, but nevertheless, you shouldn't do that. Now, Tosfos points out that in Yaakov's bracha to Yehuda, he compliments him, Miteref bni olisa, you rose up, my son, from the tearing, which can also be read, Miteref bni, from tearing and ripping up my son, olisa, you raised yourself. So that means, in other words, that no less than Yaakov Avinu is complimenting him for not killing Yosef. However, Tosfos says that's not what the pasuk means. Actually, it doesn't mean miteref bni from tearing up and destroying my son. It rather so there is a parenthetical note in Tosfos, the parenthetical note over here that the mechaber of Ein Yaakov put in from Chiddushin, that in fact Taka does mean that. And according to that, you would have to say one of the other explanations that we'll talk about in a minute of what it means that about Ovetzei Berech and Yehuda. Anyway, Tosfos themselves says that no. When Yaakov is saying Miteref bni olisa, what he means is the fact that you didn't kill Tamar, the fact that you admitted in the whole matter of Tamar, rather than allowing her to be put to death, for that you deserve to be complimented. But not the matter of Yosef, because in fact Yaakov would not say, well, I mean, Mephoshim discussed the question, did Yaakov even really ever find out what the brothers had done to Yosef? There are in fact Mephoshim who learned that he never found out. In fact, there's an interesting explanation. You know, we find when Yaakov, your father is sick, they come and tell Yosef, and Yosef hurries over to Yaakov. You would think, shouldn't he be spending as much time with Yaakov? I mean, they'd been apart for 22 years. How you talking that, you know, he's busy at his office in the capital, and then he has to find out that Yaakov is sick. So there's actually an explanation about that Yosef tried to minimize the time he spends with Yaakov so that in the course of the conversation, there doesn't come up. So Yosef had to wind up in Mitzrayim anyway. So like this, Yaakov could think, on the way to find his brothers, Yosef lost his way and then ended up getting kidnapped and whatever. Yaakov doesn't have to know that the brothers were involved. Whether he knew or not, the point is Tosfos says he's not complimenting Yehuda for not killing Yosef. He's complimenting him for not allowing Tamar to be killed. Well, it's, you know, the fact that, I mean, it was a hugely embarrassing thing for a person in Yehuda's position that he outright says, Tzod Kamimeni, you know, it was a big thing. So Maharal Shah talks about it. First of all, he brings from Yafei Mare that, okay, well, then we'd have to ask, then fine, why aren't we calling Yehuda himself the Menayetz? We're saying, if somebody compliments and blesses Yehuda for doing that, then he's doing wrong. If it was Yehuda himself that did wrong, then why aren't we calling Yehuda directly a Menayetz? So he explains that, look, after all, what has come out from it? Tremendous good. Yosef became the viceroy of Mitzrayim. He saved the whole world from famine. So on the face of it, Yehuda ought to be praised that this whole plan of Hashem's happened through him. So now, if a person thinks that, though, so for Yehuda himself, you could argue maybe he figured he didn't have a choice. But what are you telling us then? If you're complimenting Yehuda for it and saying, after all, a good thing came out of it, it amounts to saying that Hashem put it into Yehuda's mind that he should do this, that they should sell Yosef. And Hashem, obviously everything ultimately comes from Hashem, but we can't say Hashem would put in a person's mind to do something which is rishus. So therefore, that person has bechira chofshes, after all. So in that sense, then the person who compliments Yehuda and says, after all, through him, Hashem's purpose was fulfilled, then that's menayetz. This is how Maharal brings from Yafei Mara to that effect. So Maharal himself continues and goes on and says that maybe actually the other way around. On the contrary, the word mevorech could actually the word mevorech we know often also means to curse, like birkas Hashem. So maybe it means fakir. So Maharal says it can mean fakir. If a person puts down and curses out Yehuda for this and says, look, you know why the whole thing Yehuda, why did he save Yosef, is apparently just for money. After all, he says to the brothers, my betza, what do we have to gain from it? Implying that if he thought they have something to gain from it financially, they would kill him. If somebody thinks like that about Yehuda and therefore curses him for that, that is actually menayetz Hashem. Because in fact, that wasn't really Yehuda's motivation. Yehuda's motivation was really l'shem shamayim. So he didn't want that as a but he figured he was concerned that the brother here, Rashi is saying that if he had told them to return him, then they would have listened. In fact, Rashi mentions the same thing on Chumash, that later on the brothers demoted Yehuda from his position, from his high position, because they said, you know what, if you had told us to send him home, we would have done that. Yehuda himself, though, says Maharal, didn't think so. He didn't think that they were going to be willing to go that far. So therefore, he made the best of what he had. So now, if you're going to claim that he only did it for financial gain, then that would be insulting Hashem. Really, he meant it l'shem shemayim. So that's Maharal Shah's explanation. So therefore, in other words, fakert, we're saying that it's telling us that Yehuda was doing good, after all. So we have several different explanations over here of what Bekseya Beirach Nietz Hashem means. There are Mephoshim who talk about that all of them kind of have this in common. Each time you have a person is doing something which is wrong, later on the Gemara is going to bring another one as well involving Aaron with making the Egel. Each of them is something which it turns out was wrong, and the person thinks to himself, and the person rationalizes to himself that there's a good reason for doing it. The Dayan thinks it's better to make a Pshara. He doesn't realize that that's not what the Eibishter wants in this case. According to Rabbi Eliezer ben Osher, Rabbi Yisrael Glili, at least we're going to see other opinions soon. The person who steals wheat and all thinks he has an opportunity to do a mitzvah over here, ultimately to give challah, but to take challah, but he's wrong in that. And the same thing with Yehuda, and the same thing with Aaron and the eagle. And there are different other points about it. An interesting point that's brought in this regard is with Yehuda specifically. Now you think of it. Look, we know the brothers also meant in their own way the Shem Shemayim. They thought Yosef is a danger to the whole family. They thought he's trying to make himself king over them, and maybe he's going to end up kicking them all out and becoming the exclusive ancestor of the Jewish people and throwing them all out like Yishmael and like Esav in their times, and therefore they figured they have to prevent that. But after all, there's no middle ground over there. Either Yosef is a danger and they have to get rid of him, or he's Taka Yaakov's legitimate heir, or at least he's in a way the best of all the children, and he has his milus and so forth. So what happens if Yehuda is saying let's kind of make a compromise over here and let's sell him? That amounts to you making a compromise between Emes and Sheker, and you can't do that. So therefore, that's what we're saying over here, that Yehuda had no business trying to make a compromise like that. There's room for compromises in life, but not when it comes to Emes versus Sheker. There's no middle ground. So then Yehuda should have realized the Emes is that Yehuda is not, that Yosef is not a danger to anybody, and Adrabi, he's in certain ways, he has a greater mila than all the brothers, and therefore he shouldn't be compromising. Let's sell him to the Ishmaelim. He should say outright, we got to do what we got to do and return him home safely. Okay. Now, so far we had Rabbi Eliezer, Ben Yosef, Rabbi Yitzchak Levi, saying that you're not allowed to make a compromise. Earlier, there was an earlier part of the Braisa that's not quoted in the Gemara over here that had mentioned other opinions that says you're allowed to. So now the Braisa continues, Rabbi Yeshua ben Kochayim, mitzvah livtsoya. It's actually a mitzvah for the dayan to make a compromise when possible. Shenemar, as the passage says, emes u'mishpat sholem shiftu b'sha'arechem. Judge in your gates, which is where the Bata Dinim would set, with truth and with mishpat. Now you have to ask, those two things seem to be opposites. Valad makom shesh mishpat ein sholem, emes mishpat sholem. So how is the mishpat sholem? Valad makom shesh mishpat ein sholem. Where there's mishpat, where the dayan says you're right and you're wrong, then there's not going to be sholem because the person who ended up losing the case is not necessarily going to accept it. Okay, he may, you know, look, he's not going to go fight the thing openly, but he's not feeling very much at peace about it. Of Mokam Shia Sholem and Mishpat, and vice versa. If you make Sholem, then you don't have a Mishpat. So what is it? How do you have Mishpat Sholem, the two of them together? And the pasuk that says Mishpat Sholem, Marsha points out, implies that we're not talking about Mishpat here and Sholem there, because after all, the pasuk is saying Shiftu B'Sha'arechem. So in your gates, in the very place where the Dim Torah takes place, there has to be Mishpat and there has to be Sholem. So how do you do that? Ella, a zehu mishpat, sheyesh bei sholem, so where do you have both? Heviyem, is a bitsua, so Rabbi Shimon Kocha says, that would be bitsua, that would be brokering a compromise between them. So now there's mishpat, because it is according to the din, and they do both agree to it, and they're therefore, like we learned about yesterday, then there's mechila. You can say that the person who's willing to accept, I'm not going to pay the full thing, or I'm not going to receive the full thing, fine, there is mishpat over there, because after all, he is mechil on it, so it genuinely does fit according to halacha, and there's also shalom. So therefore, says Rabbi Shimon Kocha, you actually should do that. And we find by David HaMelech. The pasuk says, right, he David owes him mishpat with tzedakah. That David was doing mishpat and tzedakah. So you can ask the same question. Mishpat and tzedakah, or tzedakah and mishpat. Mishpat suggests the actual, this is the din. There's no favoritism, and because the guy is poor, we have to help defend him or whatever. And tzedakah, on the other hand, means going with Nimashurah Sadin. So how do you have that? And again, L'chol Amoy suggests, and Marsha explains, that it means that to the same people he's doing Mishpat and Tzedakah. Now, later on, the Gemara is going to bring other opinions where it comes out that there were Mishpat and Tzedakah to two different people. But here, Rabbi Shlomo ben Kocha is saying that no, it means to the same person. So again, Ela Ezo Mishpat Shiesh Beit Tzedakah, how do you accomplish both Mishpat and Tzedakah? Heviyem Ezebitzua. So again, you have, this is by making a compromise. Yeah, it doesn't mean a mitzvah. Yeah, in Gemara terminology, when you want to say that you're required to do something, the word for it is choiva. When you say mitzvah, is more like you're saying it's a right thing to do, but it's not an absolute obligation. Yeah. No, it's not one of them. Mind you, just because, so many times the Gemara will say something is a mitzvah, or the Gemara will say a person is over on X number of loisesses and whatever, and they're not necessarily counted among the 613 mitzvahs anyway. For a variety of reasons. I mean, we know, for example, that Amram, at the beginning of Sefer HaMitzvah, has his 14 Shoshim, where he explains the rules of how we count something as a mitzvah and how not. Sometimes you don't count it separately because the detail of another mitzvah. Sometimes you don't count it because the general statement that amounts to saying keep the Torah. Sometimes it can be because it's just being repeated in the Torah over and over to stress the importance of it, but not to add more mitzvahs, etc. They have all the various rules of the Rambam about that, right? So now the Gemara continues. Asan the Tanakama. The following statement that we're now going to quote from a Braisa, this goes back now to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosef, Rabbi Yitzchak Levi's opinion that you're not supposed to make a pshara, and then we have to understand then what is this mishpat tzedakah that David accomplished. Meaning, according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Kocha, was saying he did bitsua, and therefore that's that. But now I saw in the Tanakama. Now we have to go back to the opinion of the Tanakama, meaning Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosef, Rabbi Yitzchak Levi, and see how he would understand that. Donas Adin, if a Dayan judges a case, Zika as a Zakai v'chiyav as a chayev, and he exonerates the one who's supposed to be exonerated and patters him from paying, v'chiyav as a chayev, and he declares the one who's guilty to be guilty and then liable and having to pay, v'rosh nischayev oni mamin. Now suppose then the Dayan sees the result is now a poor person owes money. V'shilim lo mitoch beisoi. So now the Dayan goes and pays that poor person out of pocket. Zem mishpat utzdaka, so that would be mishpat and tzdaka, mishpat lazeh utzdaka lazeh. Now he's accomplished mishpat for one and tzdaka for the other. So in other words, mishpat utzdaka does not have to be like Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha said, that you make a pshara, because again, Rabbi Yezer ben Oshra, Rabbi Yisag, really, he's saying you shouldn't make a pshara, but rather that you can accomplish that by reimbursing the poor person afterwards. Marsha points out that you could have a case, for example, that the poor person was judged liable, and he has to pay X amount, but he can't afford it right now. And the din would be in that case that he doesn't pay right now. You wait until he can earn, until he can raise the money, and then he'll pay for it. But now, nevertheless, let's say, for example, up until now, he had to give a mashkin to the malveh. And the din is, as we know, the malveh has to return the mashkin every morning or every evening, and the posset calls that tzedakah. So now, kind of, David took over that tzedakah by paying the poor person so that he can now go pay off his debt and get his mashkin. So now, it's almost like now he's depriving the malveh of being able to do that tzedakah anymore. Now David has taken over that tzedakah instead by making it possible for the poor person to pay. In fact, Maharsha brings on that. You have a posik where David says, "Osisi mishpat v'tzedek bal tanichemi la'oshkai." So what does he mean by that? Given that I'm doing mishpat v'tzedek, that I'm doing this, I'm judging cases, and then if the poor person is made liable and he has to pay, then I pay for him. So now what's going to happen? You're going to have all kinds of tricksters who are going to say, "Hey, we can get a good scam going over here. We can have two people come to Beis Din, and one of them, and then bring a fictitious case, and in such a way that the poor person will be judged guilty, and then David will pay him, and therefore we have an easy way of scamming David out of money." So therefore, so David is saying, because of Sisi Mishpat Tzedek, Hashem, please, Al Tanicheni La'oshkai, Hashem, don't allow such a thing to happen, that people are going to use that as an opportunity to trick me and scam me out of money. So mishpat lazeh utzdaka lazeh. Mishpat lazeh shehech zolei mamon. So the mishpat is in behalf of the one person, that he now gets the money that he was supposed to. Utzdaka lazeh, and at the same time, he's accomplishing tzedakah for the poor person, sheshilim lemetech beisei, that he pays out of pocket and gives the other person the opportunity to pay. And you find another pasuk about David that's relevant to this also. As we said, Vayhi David oisem mishpat tzedakah l'chamim, mishpat lazeh. Same thing, mishpat lazeh shehech zolayas mamoni, or tzedakah lazeh sheshilim lemetech beisei. So that's how you do mishpat tzedakah, according to Rabbi Eliezer, but no should Rabbi Yisrael Glili, rather than by making a pshara. The problem is kashal le Rebbe, but Rebbe had a problem understanding that. Hi l'chol amoy, then why are the pasuk saying l'chol amoy that he did it for all his people? La'aniyim mi barilei. In that case, it comes out that he's only doing this for the poor people. So how is it l'chol amoy? Ella Rebbe omer. So Rebbe says no. You have to understand differently. Afapi shaloi shilim l'mitet beisui. Even if Rebbe did not pay the poor person out of pocket, and he would have to come up with the money himself. Nevertheless, zeh mishpat tzedakah. Even that, an actual din Torah, where the verdict has been decided properly, is still called mishpat tzedakah. Mishpat lazeh, tzedakah lazeh. Mishpat lazeh, shehech zolei mamonei. The mishpat is in on behalf of the one that the malveh, for example, gets back his money. Tzedakah lazeh, how is it tzedakah for the other one when David is not paying him out of pocket? Shehoitzik zeh mitachas yadei. He causes that person to be a tzaddik by taking away from him something that otherwise would have been considered stolen in his hand. When a Dayan does that and judges properly, then he's doing that. It's not only a favor to the one who won the case, it's also a favor to the one who lost the case, because until now he had money in his hand that he shouldn't have. And now David is taking it away from him and restoring it to where it belongs. Well, then, Marsha says, in that case, he brings from Yifei Mara, well, then what's the chiddush? Why are we saying that dafka about David? Any Dayan who judges a din Torah properly is going to accomplish that. So he says that the vote is that really, though, it's more the pasuk is stressing, we're going to have later on in the Masechta, that David was doing Mishpat Tzedakah, and he was interdependent with Yoav. Yoav was the general who was fighting David's battles, and he was winning. Yoav ben Tzruya Latzava. The pasuk continues there and says that Yoav was in charge of the army, meaning each one of them was able to be successful because he was able to depend on the other one. David is able to do Mishpat Tzedakah. He has the time and the headspace for being able to judge, Dinei Mamonos, because he knows that he can rely on Yoav to be fighting his battles. And vice versa, Yoav is able to be successful in his battles because of the tzchus of David doing Mishpat Tzedakah. There were other days. In general, a melech, David was able to be a dayan on the Sanhedrin, but aside from that also, there are certain cases we have din melech. You have, for example, cases where there's no proper edim or hasra or whatever, then a melech is entitled to judge those even when you don't have the usual rules of evidence, so a basin might not be able to do anything with it, but a melech is able to do that in order to keep society running properly. Because the fact is, it's true, David is doing that as well, but the fact that he's doing Mishpat Tzedakah is not a chiddush in that. Any dayan who does that, so fine, a regular dayan is going to have to do it based on Edim and then the whole 9 yards. David doesn't necessarily need that, but as far as the Mishpat Tzedakah, there's not really a difference between David's Din Malchus versus a regular Beis Din. But the point is, in other words, that what's more stressing the point that the result of David doing Mishpat Tzedakah is that Yoav is successful in his wars, and vice versa. And because Yoav is successful in that, therefore that allows David that gives David the ability to be able to do Mishpat Tzedakah. A different point, other Mefarshim point out, another reason as well is, we're going to learn later in the Masechta that David had the quality that halacha ima, that havaya ima, halacha kamoise b'chol makom, that he had special siyata d'shmaya to always come to the correct conclusion in halacha. So it comes out that when he paskin a din Torah, in fact, it definitely was mishpat with tzedakah for both of them, mishpat for the one and tzedakah for the other, as opposed to other dayanim who don't necessarily have that siyata d'shmaya. It could, after all, happen that they made a mistake in the din Torah, and therefore they didn't really do mishpat with tzedakah after all. So therefore we stress it particularly about David, because by David it was a given that it's going to be that way. So at this point, the Ein Yaakov skips a bit of the Gemara. We'll go back to it soon. And continues. Now this that we've been saying disagrees with Rav Tanchum Bar Chaniloi when we had several different explanations over Etzeya Berach Mietz Hashem. So now we have another opinion of what it's referring to. So far we had Rabbi Yezer Ben Yosef Rabbi Yisak Levi saying that it means a person who praises a dayan who makes a pshara, where he held you're not allowed to do that. We had Rabbi Yezer saying it means a person who steals grain and makes bread out of it and takes challah from it and then makes a bracha. And Rameyer had said that it was referring to Yehuda and anybody who compliments him, or according to Marashah, anybody who insults him for doing what he did. So now the Gemara is saying, well, pligo that Tam from Bachaniloi. So now this disagrees with Tam from Bachaniloi. Tam from Bachaniloi. Le'nema mikraze elakneg meiser egel. This posik is referring, the posik of Etzei Aberach is referring to the meiser egel. Namely, when how could Aaron do such a thing as to make the egel? So if a person compliments him for doing so, he shouldn't have done that, he made a pshara kind of to make it where he shouldn't have done that. And if a person thinks that he did the right thing, then that's also Nietz Hashem. That's according to Rashi, that Reb Tanchum Bar Chaniloi is referring to the pasuk of Etzei Aberach. Tosfos, on the other hand, has a whole different explanation that, no, it's actually Reb Tanchum is actually referring to the pasuk that we quoted, we learned in yesterday's piece, when the pasuk says about Aaron, that Toras Emes Hoise B'Fihu. And he said that meant, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yosef Rabbi Yisak Levi, it meant that he was making psharis between people, which he was able to because he wasn't serving as a dayan, or because he did before the din Torah ever came to him, because like we looked about yesterday, he would proactively go to the people and suggest to them a pshara. So now, according to Tosfos, the Gemara is saying that explanation is disagreeing with Rav Tanchum Bar Chaniloi, because Rav Tanchum Bar Chaniloi is actually saying that Aaron did the right thing by making the egel, because, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he had no choice, and therefore that, for him, that was Toras Emes.
Rav Tanchum says that He thought that the Mechabim would come back by the time they...
Right, well, there is that. But still, Rashi is saying that still, Reb Tankum would still say, it's still Betseya Berech, it's still, you don't compliment him for being Betseya, for making that Pshara. Yeah, let's go ahead and make the Egel, and it'll be the least worst option, because he shouldn't have done that. Whereas again, Tosfos is saying, Faker, that Reb Tankum wants us to know, it was a good thing that he did that. Because as the Gemara is going to go on to say, basically, yeah, he made sure they'll do the least worst thing they could do under the circumstances. There is actually, so there's a sefer of Chidushim on the Sefer Sanhedrin called Binyan Shloima. The author of Nosson Maz was the name of the author. He was one of the Dayanim of Frankfurt in the times of Afla. He was a member for a short time. He was the temporary Rav of Frankfurt between one Rav and the next. Afterwards, he was a member of the Baal Afla's based in. He was a Rosh Hashiva there in Frankfurt. Very, very chosh of a Rav. He's actually a distant relative of mine. So he has a sefer of Chidushim on Sanhedrin and also on Avodah Zarah from Shiurim that he gave in the yeshiva. He points out over here, listen, you know, Rashi doesn't want to accept Tosfos as Pirush, because after all, look, we do find in the pasuk that Aaron had done wrong and that Moshe and Hashem was very angry at him, and Aaron and Moshe had to daven for him, and even then he lost two of his children. So therefore, Rashi doesn't want to say like Tosfos that Reb Tankum is going to tell us it was Todas Emes to go to that extent. Well, no, we're not going to say. Anyway, so he says, so what happened with the eagle? What? Tanakhum is positive, I guess, yeah. Okay. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Vayar Aaron, that Aaron saw, Vayivin Mizdeach Lefonim, and he built the Mizdeach in front of the eagle. So, Mara, what exactly did he see? Vayar suggests that he actually saw something with his eyes. So what did he see? Amar Ben Yamin by Yefes, Amar Abelazar, Ra Chur Shezavuach Lefonim. He saw Chur having been killed in front of him. So in other words, we understand by Yiven, as if it said by Yoven, that he understood, and Mizbeach, we repunctuate to say Mizavuach, from the one who was killed. So we saw that Chor was killed. How do we know? Now we know, this is the Gemara from where we know, Rashi brings it on the pasuk, that they killed Chor because he tried to stand up to them. How do we know? It was Davka Chor. Marsha points out, you know, up until then, Chor has a very prominent position among the Jewish people. He's one of the ones who held up Moshe's hands during the battle with Amalek. He's the one where before Moshe goes up to Har Sinai, he tells them, Vihine Aaron v'Chor imachem, that Aaron and Chor should be substituting for me while we're away. After the Chet Egel, all of a sudden, we never hear of him again. We have Leib Betzalel as his grandson, but we don't find Chor himself. Therefore, that indicates that he was killed. So now, Omar, so Aaron thinks to himself, Eloi Shmaina Lahu, if I don't listen to them and do something over here, Hashta, then now, Ovdu Bechor, they're going to do to me exactly what they did to Chor, and they're going to kill me. Or Mikayim B, and then there's going to be fulfilled because of me. As the pasuk says, Im Yehorek B'Mikdash Hashem Koyin V'Navi, how could it be that there was killed in the Beis Mikdash a Koyin and a Navi, which refers to hundreds of years later when they killed Zechariah, the Navi, in the Zechariah Ben Yehoyada, in the Beis Mikdash. This is not Zechariah from Treyasa, this is an Udiu Navi named Zechariah. And we know the whole story that the blood was bubbling over there for 200 odd years, and then the Rizadadin came and killed an enormous number of Jews, and it finally stopped. And the implication seems to be, in other words, that at that point was when the Gzeira of the Churban was made. This is when Yumi is complaining in Eicha, things got bad, so bad that women are eating or are cannibalizing and eating their children, and the Ruach HaKodesh answers him back, that there could be, they killed a Kohen and Navi in the Bismikdash. And at that point, the Gzeira of the Churban was first made. In fact, there's an explanation that Zechariah himself was going to say a nevuah about the Churban. There's an interesting story told about the Alter Rebbe involving that. In his time, there was somebody who had a dibuk, and the Alter Rebbe came to try to deal with it. And the neshama tells him, I was one of the people who helped kill Zechariah, and the reason for it, I don't remember. There's different versions of the story, whether the Alter Rebbe himself said it or whether the spirit himself said that the a limud zchus that he was going to say nevuah of the Churban, and when once a nevuah is said, it's not going to be so easily revoked, and therefore they killed him to prevent that from happening. And with that limud zchus, the Alter Rebbe was able to help that neshama. The Rebbe mentioned it briefly in a sicha in Lamed Hay as an aftermath of the whole story of Miriam Bas Bilga. The Rebbe talked about that on Van Vov Tishrei Lamed Hay about the limud schus from Miriam Bas Bilga, and people complained, "How you talking? You're being Lamed schus on such a roshanta," as it says in the Gemara. And the Rebbe mentioned this story that you see in the same vein that the Alter Rebbe was Lamed schus on someone, one of the people who killed Zechariah. Anyway, so the point is, in other words, that we see that so now Aaron was concerned. The same thing is going to happen now if they kill me, because I'm a Kohen and I'm a Navi. Now, Marsha points out, I mean, Aaron wasn't yet made a Kohen, because the Kohuna was only given to him later on. At this point in history, the Kohuna still belonged to the Bechorim. Well, very well, Aaron is a Bechor. He's the oldest boy in his family, so therefore he, Taka, would still be the Kohen right now. A different point that Mephoshim make is that actually from when Moshe is arguing with Hashem and refusing to go for a whole week to take Bnei Yisrael out, and finally Hashem tells him, Aaron, Achicha Levi, you should realize your brother Aaron the Levi, he'll come out and greet you and he'll be happy. And the Gemara explains that one meaning of that is Hashem tells him, it should have been you're going to be the Kohen and Aaron will be Levi, now it'll be the other way around. So already from that point, it was already Nigzer, Milamila, that Aaron is going to be the Kohen ultimately, and therefore he can call himself a Kohen now. Be that as it may, so he figured that if they end up killing him, then it's really going to be something completely unforgivable. So there'll never be any takana for them at all. For the same reason as, again, when they did it by Zechariah, then eventually it brought the Churban. Mutav, so therefore Aaron figures to himself, mutav de la evdu la egla, so fine, better let them worship the eagle, as bad as that is, efshid havilu takanta b'tshuva, at least maybe they'll be able to fix it up with tshuva, whereas if they kill Aaron, then it'll be completely irrevocable. What would be so bad about killing a Kohen and a Navi? Marsha points out that after all, look, you know, we have to listen to the Chachmei HaTorah, which are represented by the Kohen and the Navi. We even find, we're going to have later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about the Zokin Mamre, where a person disobeys them, then he's Chayav Misa. So therefore, if they kill a Kohen and a Navi, then that amounts to, they should be listening to such a person, and in this case, he was telling them, don't worship Avodah Zarah, and Fakir, they went and killed him, so therefore such a thing cannot really be fully cleaned up with Tshuva. As opposed to, with the ego, as bad as Avodah Zarah is, at least it can be cleaned up in Tshuva. So therefore, so according to that, Aaron basically did the least worst option.
One is a sin against
Hashem, one is Bein Olam HaMakom, one is Bein Olam HaMakom, that's a fair point, yeah. So again, according to Rashi, though, after all, Rav Tanchum is saying that Furt, even though Aaron had that valid calculation in mind, nevertheless, he shouldn't have done it. He should have found some way out of it. And therefore, we can say on him the Pasuk of Etzei Abderich. Whereas again, according to Tosfos, we're saying on him goes the Pasuk Todas Emes, that he did what was true and what was correct at that time.
This is suggesting that Aaron actively caused the eagle
version. No, not actively caused the eagle. They already made the eagle. Now the question is, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next when the Pasuk says that he made a Mizbeach and announced Chag L'Hashem Mocher, should he have done that? So now the idea is that we're saying that he didn't want them to kill him like they would have killed Chor.
Moshe wasn't sure they would kill him.
Well, Moshe wasn't there at the time, but yeah. When he came back down, yeah, well, for one thing, when he broke the luchas, then that like snapped everybody out of it, you know. Up until then, by Yakumu Latzachek, they're going and having a grand old time, but when they saw the luchas being broken, then that made them realize, yeah. Continues the Gemara, going back to this whole matter of Pshara, Reb Shimon ben Menasyon, Shnayim Shabol Lefanecha L'din. If two people come to you for a din Torah, then it depends. When can he make a Pshara and not, then it will actually depend. So here we had, so far we had the two different extreme opinions. We had Rabbi Eliezer ben Osher, Rabbi Yisrael Levi saying, once, as soon as the din Torah came to you, don't make a Pshara. Versus we had Rabbi Yeshua ben Farucha saying, Mitzvah L'Tzoya, it's a mitzvah, it's a good thing to make a Pshara. So Reb Shimon ben Menasyon has kind of a middle ground. Actually, Tishma Divrehem, before you hear what they have to say, or even after you've heard their arguments, but you still don't know which way is the din likely to go. You have to start looking into the poskim and figuring out what the din is going to be. Then you can tell them, up until that point, you can tell them, go ahead and make a pshara. But once you heard what they said, and you know which way the din is supposed to be going, then you can't tell them make a pshara anymore. Now, Rashi and Tosfos discuss over here, are we talking about, in other words, that the, when we say Va'atiyah de lahechan adin noita, is it that you already know what the verdict is going to be? You just haven't announced it yet. You haven't told them yet, ish ploini at the chayav, ish ploini at the zakai. So then at that point, it's too late to make a pshara because you already know what the din is going to be. Tosfos actually discusses, not here in Ein Yaakov, it could even be that we're talking about, it could even be after you said the psak din. Now, the obvious question, if you already said the psak din, you're chayav, you're zakai, why would they even accept the pshara at that point? So Tosfos says, the point is, you shouldn't tell them, you know what, this is how I think the psak din is. But after all, I'm not 100% sure. And especially if there's a shvua involved, then I don't want to cause a false shvua. So maybe after all, you should be willing to accept a compromise. No, Reb Shimon Menasseh says it's too late for that already. What?
Story is that by Lamed Ches had a heart attack.
Yeah.
People even said, Rabbanim want to come in and tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Yes, but the hospital. They said, no. I want to know if they're going to tell me. So once they tell me,
that. Once they tell me, I have to listen. Yeah. So. Yep. So that's kind of what Reb Shimon Menasseh is saying. I'm hearing. Right. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, poter mayim reishis modon, to let loose the water is the beginning of a quarrel. So Rashi explains, the Gemara is going to explain later, that a quarrel, an argument, can be compared to water. So you start with a little leak, and if you don't take care of it right away, then it becomes bigger and bigger, and the same way an argument is the same way. So now, poter mayim, Rashi explains, if you want to pater and get rid of this argument before the flood, before the flood of water starts, when can you do that? Reishis modern, only at the beginning of the argument, only before there's the maso matan, before there's the give and take in the din Torah. And the pasuk continues, v'lefnei skala horim, and before the argument becomes uncovered, which means, in other words, when you're at the point of a verdict, you know already it's uncovered and it's clear to the dayan what the verdict is going to be. Lifnei hasgala hariv nitosh, then abandon it. Which means, Reb Shimon Menasseh says, kodim shenisgala hariv, before this argument is exposed, meaning before it's exposed in the mind of the dayan what the verdict is going to be, that this one is going to be chayav, this one is going to be zakai, after yochol and noitre, then you can abandon it and tell them instead make a pshara. Mishnisgala hariv, but once that verdict has been exposed and is known to the dayan, or as Tosfos says, maybe even after he said it, maybe even after he gave the verdict, after yochol and noitre, then you can't abandon it, then you have to see through the actual decision as it is. So in other words, Marshall explains, in other words, it comes out basically from Rashi that the Gemara is actually dashing both halves of the pasuk as telling us basically the same thing. You want to make a pshara, you want to have a poter mayim, and you want to do nitosh, then there's a certain deadline by which you can do it, and no later than that.
Didn't they all agree to the pshara?
So even if that's the thing, so Reb Shimon Menasseh is saying, once you know, laheichan adin noita, whether according to Rashi, you haven't said the verdict yet, but the dayan already knows what the verdict is going to be, he just hasn't said it yet, or as Tosfos is saying, maybe even at, the possibility is we're talking even after the verdict was given, I meant to tell them, but you know, I'm not 100% sure, maybe make up shorter. Yeah, Reb Shimon Menasseh says you can't do that anymore. Now the Gemara continues, Resh Lakish Amar, Resh Lakish says, now Resh Lakish doesn't belong in a Braisa usually, so there's different Gersois, Reb Yehuda ben Lakish, or Reb Yeshua ben Lakish, so, who are Tanoim. Anyway, he says, here's another din that you can learn from that. Shnayim Shabol Adin, if two people come to a din Torah, Echad Rach ve'Echad Kosher, one of them is a gentle kind of person, and you tell him a verdict, then he'll accept it. And the other one is a Kosher, you know, like we have every morning in Davening, Nibal Din Kosher. So it means, in other words, Rashi explains it means a quarrelsome, argumentative kind of guy. So you're going to tell him a psak din, he's not going to accept it and go. He's not going to, like you just said, you know, medav fogendim dayan, medav fogendim rov. He's going to go and start arguing and then bringing up all kinds of, and harassing the dayan. So you have two people like that. So then Resh Lakish, or whatever the Gersa is, says, so here's what it means. Actually, Tishma Divrehem, before you hear what they have to say, or you've heard their initial arguments, but you don't yet know what the Psak Din is going to be, then you, the Dayan, are allowed to tell them, you know what, I'm recusing myself, I don't want to get involved in your case. Shema is chayav chazak, because after all, the stronger person, the tougher person, may end up being found liable. But it's a chazak roidfoy, and now this tough guy is going to be pursuing him and bugging him and then trying to get in and trying to bug him to overturn the verdict. So therefore, see, you can say, you know what, I'm recusing myself of this and send them to another dayan.
We're talking about the dayan here.
However, says Rish Lakish, once you've heard their arguments and you know which way the verdict is going to go, then at this point you can't say anymore, I don't want to get involved with you. Now you got to see it through. Because the pasuk says, don't be afraid of any person. So this is a separate thing. This is we're saying we just had the explanation of Rav Shimon ben Manasseh that there's a limit when you can make a pshara. So now the Shlokish is saying another point. There's also a limit up to what point you can tell them I don't want to get involved in this din Torah. Now according to Rashi, then we're talking about this din this kosher this chazak or kosher person. We're not talking about that he's going to harass the dayan physically or something. We're just talking about he's going to be a nudnik and he's going to be bugging the dayan to overturn the din. On the other hand, Tosfos says we're actually talking about that he's going to be roidif the dayan, which implies, in other words, he's going to actually try to harm the dayan financially or physically or whatever. So now Tosfos points out if they're both kosher, then fine, then at least in a way the dayan's not that bad off. One of them is going to try to harass him, but the other one then will stand up for the dayan, because after all, one of them is going to win. Is going to win the case. But if one's rach and one kosher, you don't know, the kosher may end up losing the case. Now there is an enormous amount of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim with different opinions. What exactly is the situation? Are we talking about where the dayan is Poshet going to be threatened physically or financially by this guy, and we're saying that even then there comes a point when he can't recuse himself from the din? So maybe he should have, if his life is actually in danger from the guy, maybe he should have a right to recuse himself. So there's different opinions about it. One possibility is that, in general, fine, even if the guy is going to make threats, we don't necessarily assume that a yid is going to go and actually physically harm a dayan for ruling against him. So at most, you know, it's going to be empty threats or something. Not necessarily is that a reason to recuse yourself. So then, according to that, post can talk about, if you know that this guy has a habit of doing that, of physically assaulting or whatever the dayan, and then you may have, you may have a right to recuse yourself, even if you already know lahechan adin noita. They talk about also that if it's a matter of a possible financial loss the guy might cause, are you entitled to recuse yourself because of that? Because again, you know, if you're not necessarily responsible to lose a lot of money in order to accomplish a mitzvah. There's a certain limit to how much you're obligated to give in order to be mechayim a mitzvah saseh. So does that factor in over here or does that not? There is even an interesting explanation that even if the guy is physically parshut here, or his children or whatever are going to be in danger from this baal din kosha, nevertheless, we're going to say, listen, you know, it's al derech like a soldier in the army. He also is putting his life on the line, but that's his job. So in that sense, maybe that is a dayan's job, and therefore he doesn't have the ability to recuse himself even in a case like that. So then in Choshen Mishpat and Simin Yud Beis, it talks about this, and you have different opinions that the Noisei Kalim bring over there when a dayan is and isn't allowed to recuse himself because of potential danger.
Says
Loisa Guru, but the question is, to what extent does Loisa Guru apply?
No,
but the point is, Loisa Guru can mean, for example, let's say you have that, like Rashi is saying, you have to be afraid of the guy's going to be a nudnik or something. Maybe that's Loisa Guru. Not necessarily will it apply when if the dayan stands to suffer financially or physically or whatever, then it might be different. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, talking about more on this business of Loisa Guru and what the implications of that are. Yom Yom Mashiach Gula. Dalad Ir. So in the time of Yeshua, Even after the Jewish people conquered Eretz Yisrael in the time of Yeshua, not always afterwards was there Kol Yeshve Alel, that all or most of the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael. We know there came points when there weren't, after Reuben and Gad and so forth were taken into Golos, and at that point certain mitzvahs stopped being in effect temporarily. But Lo'asid Lovey, really read Kol Yeshve Alel. We're going to have the Aseres HaShvatim, who were exiled behind the Har Sambatim. We're also going to have all Bnei Yisrael from all the generations. So we'll have the Kol Yashvel. We'll also have the completion of Aleha, because we never had the whole 10 lands, Keni, Knezim, Kadmoni. So therefore, so then we'll have the most perfect version of Kol Yashvel and also the most perfect version of Aleha. And then, as the Rambam says, Shmitis and Yovel and all the other dinim that apply only when Kol Yeshveh Aleha will come back into effect, because we'll have, once again, we'll have Kol Yeshveh and we'll have Aleha in a greater measure even than before. We started talking about yesterday in the dinim of Tzitzis about the number of Chuyas and the number of knots and so forth. So the minig is that we have four sections of winding among the five knots. So you have the four strings from one and four the other. You make a double knot. It has to be a double knot because a single knot is not going to be miskayim. It's not considered a knot. In Hilchos Shabbos also, for example, a single knot, like you do in the first tie your shoelaces, is not considered a knot. Then you use the long string, you use the shamash to make some windings, another two knots, and you repeat this until you have five knots with four spaces with windings between them. In principle, there's no minimum and maximum number of the one number of windings. But the minig is, of course, that we do, the common minig is we do 7, then 8, then 11, then 13, which we'll talk about in a later simon, but the ideal is that the tzitzis themselves should be that one third of the length should be the windings and the knots, and the other two thirds should be the hanging part. So now, we talked about before, the tzitzis have to be 12 gudlim, so even if they're longer than 12 gudlim, it should be that proportion, one out of three should be the windings and the knots. So, in fact, the Raya Mehemne in the Zohar talks about that there should be between each knot and then between one knot and the next, there should be Ruichabat Gudel, the width of a thumb. So the Maisa, when you're doing that, you do the width of a thumb, and in that you have your seven or eight or whatever, or number of windings for that section. Huh? Stan?
Yeah.